You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Craig Burley and Shaka Hislop. We'll start in the Premier League. Arsenal in action against Chelsea. And what an impressive performance this would be from Arteta's side. We see Trossard open the scoring early. Arsenal dominated the first half, though Chelsea did have a couple of chances. Nico Jackson with the opportunity that he couldn't take. And then they just capitulated in the second half. Arsenal getting four more goals to give them a very comfortable 5-0 win over their London rivals. And what that means is that Arsenal extend their lead at the top of the table over Liverpool to 3 points. And for more on this game, let's welcome in, shall we? Stuart Robson joins us. We'll be hearing from Robbo in a moment.
Where are we starting with this?
I want to start with Arsenal because let's be honest. After that defeat against Villa and the exit from the Champions League against Bayern Munich, where they were really poor, you kind of thought, wow, this could be their season once again, just fading away.
But domestically, they've been pretty good up until
the Villa game, so maybe that was the reason.
The cost.
They obviously got the win against Wolves. And then to do this and make it look so easy. I know against an inferior opposition, but still.
Yeah, Wolves wasn't a sparkling performance, but they didn't need a sparkling performance. You mentioned that Villa and Bayern Munich had to be put to bed. Those performances, those results had to be put to bed and quickly. And it was, and they were. And that's all they needed at Molineux. And it was tight. I mean, up until the late goal in injury time, you know, they could have easily dropped some points. Not because they weren't dominating the game, because, you know, they didn't kill Wolves off. In all fairness, today, after they take the early lead through the great goal from Trossard, a bit of a mistake from the goalkeeper at the near post, who ultimately actually played well for a lot of the game, although he lost 5 goals, they had a couple of chances, half chances in the first half, and it wasn't, for long periods, the first half for Chelsea wasn't a disaster. The rest of it just was. I mean, the way they fell apart. He decided that he was going to change his two centre-halves, Chalobah and
I thought we were talking about Arsenal.
Oh, yeah. I was swinging the ship around.
It's hard not to talk about Chelsea.
I mean, it's hard not to sort of talk about one without talking about. But, OK, Arsenal, where have the problem positions been? You know, at left-back, so it was Tomiyasu today. Odegaard's performance?
Sensational.
Terrific again. Kai Havertz? There is no doubt it's Jekyll and Hyde. Because in the first half, he's in the penalty area. His link-up play for the first goal was great. That saw Declan Rice go in and then Trossard. Then he gets put through after another mistake from Badia Shield. He's very hesitant, plays a crappy ball to the left. You're thinking, oh my God, this is a havoc. And then he scores two really good goals in the second half. So it's the Jekyll and Hyde, and there's no doubt about it. He is. You know, you just don't know what you're going to get. And today, second half, he was much better. Rock solid. It wasn't Jorginho in the midfield, you know, I've talked about that, but it was Thomas Partey. Yep. So it allowed Rice and Odegaard to go and express themselves a little bit more. And I think, and I've always said that Arsenal are a much better side when they have that facet to the team where Rice worries about defensive duties but doesn't have to worry about it as much as when he's got two attacking players in there, and then we see the best of him. So they can do no more. This was a first-class performance, particularly for 45 minutes to an hour. And they've absolutely wiped the floor with this Chelsea side.
And they came out with such energy.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, Havertz could have had that penalty really early on. Trossard opens the score in early. And then the second half performance, fantastic. They look like they're up for this.
They did. And to be fair, I thought Arsenal were, well, quite clearly, by far the better team. Started well, started really brightly. A little bit of a mistake, as I mentioned in the highlight from Petrovic for the goal, but take nothing away from Arsenal and their performance. And while I talk about the mistake from Petrovic, he was incredible for the rest of the first half. It quite easily could have been 3 or 4. Arsenal were just that much better than Chelsea. But while I sing their praises, I it's hard to get away from Chelsea's performance. I know you're trying, Dan. You're trying.
I'm just going to go to Robert. Can I go to Robert?
All right, go to Robert. And then we'll deal with that. All right, okay.
But it's difficult.
I know. Robbo, please just help me out. Just for Arsenal here, you were very critical of them, saying they're a very emotional side. When things are going great, they're great. And I think it was after the Villa game, you were like, when they go down, it's difficult for them to lift themselves back up. They've completely lifted themselves back up, haven't they, after that Champions League disappointment?
Absolutely. The result against Wolves was the massive one. And then they scored early on today, so it settled all the nerves, and they played the sort of football that we've seen them play on numerous occasions this season. That's why they're the leading goal scorers in the Premier League. The combination play, the passing of Odegaard, the driving runs, which Craig was talking about, from Declan Rice breaking forward for the first goal. The wide players. I mean, Saka didn't have his best game, and Cucurella did quite well against him at times. But the combination to keep getting Ben White in down the right-hand side is brilliant from Arsenal. And I think every one of their players knew exactly what their roles were. They knew exactly where the next pass was. They were clever around the box, the intricate passing, the combination play. That's what you expect from Arsenal at their very best. I thought they were brilliant tonight.
And you know, when Arsenal were able to suck Chelsea in, like the first goal, and then switch the play, in all fairness to Havertz, he drops into that number 10 role, and not one of the two centre-backs they didn't even bother coming out with him. He was able to come out, and he was able to turn and get it into Declan Rice. And Leandro Trossard held his ground really well. And he's been a key for them. You know what we've talked about him. I think it's 15 goals now. When we talk about players that are maybe on the fringe of a team, then he would come into that reckoning, right? Because even though Saka's been up and down at times this season, lost a little bit of form, then it was coming back again, he's pretty much in the side. You don't really see him being rested or dropped. Whereas Martinelli, whenever he loses a little bit of form or end product, he's generally out or he's taken off, and Trossard comes in. And that's when you need somebody to make the difference. It's not just a body. It's not just somebody coming in to play on the left-hand side. It's somebody that gives you something in the final third, whether it be a pass, a run, or a goal. And when you see his stats, 15 goals and then the assists and all the stuff he's done, it just tells you what an astute signing he was from Brighton when they made it. He has made a big difference. And a side, really, that you could still argue, whether they win the league or not this year, and that's a big if, you could still argue this side needs somebody to put the ball in the back of the net. So they've shared it around thus far quite well.
Right then, shall we move on to the other team that featured in this game? Such was the performance from Chelsea, we asked Craig to give us his player ratings, and he did. Here they are then, in all their glory. Normally, these requests are responded by get stuffed or get someone else to do it.
Well, the producer, Pete, did ask me, and I was sat having a cup of tea, and I was losing the will to live during the game. So I did say, I gave Petrovic, and I can't see these graphics, so help me out here. Okay. I gave Petrovic four, because he made a mistake, but he made some really good saves.
Yes.
I'm not going to pick on a youngster in young Gilchrist. That's better, Tommy. Thanks very much. I'm not going to pick on the youngster. Disasi, 3. Cucurella, 3. Because their experience, Badi Ashile. Oh, my God. With and without the ball, he was terrible. You know, 200 million in the midfield. Again, Caicedo, useless. Gallagher runs about. Madueke, he tries and he tries to get at people. Mihajlo Mudrić, oh, my God. And once again, he might as well not have been there. And then, the big star up front. 9 disciplinary problems, 9 or 10 yellow cards, should have been a red card, didn't even get a yellow, topped Tomiyasu, straight over the ball, got away with that. He was at Wembley at the weekend, he wouldn't have been able to find where the goal was if the pyrotechnics were going up behind it. And then he goes to Arsenal, he gets one of the best balls of the season played into him, and he puts his hand up instead of heading it in, and he just... This guy, Nico Jackson, I've never known a player who is almost frightened when he gets in front of goal.
This is the life of Nico Jackson over the last...
Yeah, look at that. How's that not a red, right?
Oh,
this guy makes Kai Havertz look prolific.
What's he doing?
I don't know.
He's had an absolute beast at the weekend. He's had a beast most of the season. Yes, he'll run the... He got one for having the ability to run around. Now, look at this. Watch. He got a one for the ability to run around and put a little bit of effort in. Oh, my God. I mean, I'm sorry. And this is not a one-off. This is the whole period, generally. I mean, he's a... Remember he scored all those goals against Tottenham? They were down to nine men.
Yes.
To play, and
yeah.
He went, oh, this is great, tapping it in from 5 yards. As I said, he's making Kai Havertz look like an out-and-out goal scorer. That's how bad he is. And it's not his fault Chelsea lost the game. They were horrendous all over. They got problems all over the park. I'll go back to it. He's decided today that... Obviously, he's decided Thiago Silva can't play after he played.
So he made three changes to the back four that lost against City.
Gusto's injured, right? So Malo Gusto's injured. So Gilchrist comes in, the youngster. That's fine. The back two, the two centre-halves have been Trevor Chalobah and Thiago Silva. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. City, Chelsea weren't that bad at the back against City at the weekend. It wasn't a great game. They weren't that bad. And Chalobah can still run about. And by the looks of these two, Badi Ashile and DCC, I think unless Thiago Silva had walked in with a Zimmer frame, I might have been convinced. I might have convinced that I would have given him. I said to him, "Can you play another game for me against Arsenal 3 or 4 days after you played at Wembley? Because the other two are utterly hopeless." I think I might have had that conversation, but he decided to change the two centre backs, and they were terrible. I mean, Badi Ashile. Oh my God! I mean. It's horrendous. Where did it go? But Roman Abramovich gets out because of, I'm not getting into the political landscape. They sell the club. This lot come in. All talk. You know, we're in the big underpants. We're going to do this and we're going to do that and we're going to do the next thing, blah, blah, blah. Spent an absolute fortune. And Pochettino at the moment is looking like a dreadful manager.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's not... There's no... We're not missing him with any criticism because he could be out of job. Who the hell knows? But where are they going to go?
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Are they giving all these players...
Six, seven-year contract.
Oh, we'll circumvent all these financial problems that we need to get around. We'll give these guys long contracts. I mean, as appalling as... No, I'm not even going to mention them. All right. Well, I'm not going to... I thought I was going to shoehorn another team.
Are you going to put Ten Hag in there? Wow, look at that.
Well, I'm not going to even mention their name, but there's two teams that spent a fortune and they're appalling.
Yes.
And we watched one of them today.
Robbo, how much blame should Pochettino shoulder for these sort of performances?
The one area that I just don't understand, and I've seen it all season, and we're talking about the centre-halves again, and I'm not going to talk about them defensively because they were poor defensively, but Arsenal today dropped that little bit deeper, dropped about midway in Chelsea's half and said, your two centre-halves can have the ball. Where are you going to go with it? De Sassi and Badi Ashile kept on passing it backwards and forwards to each other and they never, ever looked forward. As if they couldn't see a pass forward, whether the movement wasn't good or wasn't right there. But that's where the manager, when you do your patterns of play, you know usually where your next spot. How are we going to get from back to front? Well, the two centre-halves had no idea how they were going to get it into midfield. They had no idea how they were going to pass it beyond that. Badi Ashile had lots of time on the ball and then he'd pass it to Cucurella, who had nowhere to go with it because Saka was pressing him. And that's where they lost possession on two or three occasions and the ball was played straight to Havertz, who was in on goal. De Sassi did exactly the same. And Arsenal did it really well. Every time they tried to play into midfield, they nicked the ball and then counter-attacked. And it looked as though the two centre-halves had no confidence on the ball. They didn't know where the next pass was. I'm not sure what they were trying to do. And that's just with them on the ball. The defensive side of the game was terrible. So Pochettino has to take some responsibility for a lot of what went wrong, but so do the players, that's for sure.
57 goals.
It's the most ever. Most ever in a Premier League season.
Six to go.
Chelsea and six to go. Mm.
Thanks to the statistician in London, Johnny Blaine. I'm not going to nick that.
All right.
I don't steal things.
Okay, thanks, Johnny. Is Johnny watching?
Well, he might be. Somebody might post this to him. Six games to go. I mean, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Right, people say to me, this is typical, isn't it? You know, Graham Potter was in there. I'm not suggesting he's Guardiola Klopp before one of these morons start, right? However, this is typical of, this job's too big for him. He's English. He's never played really at any level. He was manager in Scandinavia. This is Chelsea. You know, superstars, he can't. Could you categorically say it would be as bad as this? Because it wasn't as bad as this last year.
Mm.
So, I mean, all this sort of nonsense with fans who go and say, this club's too big for him. This club's not too big for anybody, by the way. This is worse than when this club hardly had a couple of halfpennies to rub together. And I was there. And we were not a good side. But we weren't spending billions. Mm. We weren't paying people 200, 300, 400,000 a week and giving them eight-year deals. They were scratching around. It's as bad as that, if not worse.
Let me say, I think this is as bad a performance as I've seen from a top-level team. And I sat here yesterday and it was very scathing around Manchester United and Erik ten Hag. And I think this performance from Chelsea was decidedly worse. For a number of reasons. OK, you give up the early goal and Arsenal have the momentum. Arsenal are a very good team. Take nothing away from them. But then, through whether you want to say bad finishing or good goalkeeping in Petrovic, you get to the break. It's still 1-0. Second half starts. I felt at that point the Arsenal crowd started to get a little bit edgy. Mm. I witnessed it a couple of weeks ago firsthand. Just you want that goal to kill the game off. Because of everything and because of how the season unfolded last year, and you won that goal just to make sure.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the moment that Chelsea could have done something, could have forced Arsenal into a mistake or two. But, and Craig mentioned it earlier, Arsenal concede a corner, Chelsea send nobody out. When they take the corner, short corner, one player goes out. Now, that's basics. That's, you don't need a set-piece coach to know that you cannot send one player out to a short corner. And while, again, yesterday I questioned Manchester United about their lack of leadership, the lack of just basic understanding of the game, this is, again, decidedly worse. From a team that, as expensively built as it has been, we could look at individual mistakes and Robbo and Craig has done a really good job of pointing out where tactically things went wrong for Chelsea. Nobody should be making that kind of mistake. I don't care who you are, where you're playing. If you're a professional, you have to know that and you have to recognise that. And Chelsea didn't. And from there, the game's done. Now, yeah. Arsenal could score the second. And let's be honest, it could have been eight by the end. And for me, that is beyond excuse. And while Pochettino, I think, that's an on-the-field decision, this Chelsea team hasn't improved in any facet all season long. And you have to start questioning Pochettino as a result. Because while we criticise the players individually, I think Pochettino hasn't done anything to cover himself in a whole lot of glory.
And if he doesn't feel, and I don't know the answer to this, if he doesn't feel with all these people they've brought in, and by the way, thus far, Roman Abramovich and whoever was in control of the club and finance at the time really couldn't have sold it to a bunch of worse people for running the club. Mm-hmm. It would be hard to think of a group of investors, billionaires coming in that could make a bigger pig's ear than they currently are. Yep. It would be harder to figure it out. So that's the starters. But if he doesn't feel with all these people they've brought in, who I've no doubt are having a contest to see who's the big cheese, to who can make themselves look good with the spending and the recruitment and all that sort of, if he doesn't feel he's got any influence over them, he needs to have the guts, I think, to walk away.
Right.
Right. And I'm not even going to say walk away while his stock's high, because it's not. But just walk away. If he thinks it's going to be a continuous of the shambles, and I know they've been to a cup final, I understand that. But if he feels that, and it's not about the money, he needs to walk away and say, do you know what, let somebody else get involved in this. But he probably won't.
But then to that point, that's his last two jobs now. He's taken a little bit of a, his reputation has taken a little bit of a hit, yep. Pochettino. So I'm with Craig in that you can't, if this ship is sinking, you got to bail.
But then who comes out and captains that ship, Robbo? Who wants that job? And what would you do if you had that job to fix this?
Well, the trouble is with the players they've got at the moment, and Pochettino must send out his team. And as a coach, you send out your team and you've got some good players in your side. But you also want solid players, players you can depend on. When things aren't quite going well, they're going to be a 7 out of 10. They might not be expansive on their day. They might be really good players. But when they're not having a good day and the team's not having a good day, you want players that are going to be solid. They're going to put in decent performances. Pochettino puts out a team now, and which of those players that he had out on the field today could you say was going to give you a solid performance week in, week out? I'm not sure there's too many in that side. And Craig mentioned Mudryk. You just don't know what you're going to get with him. Jackson, you don't know what you're going to get with him. And they're relying on Jackson at the moment to be their out ball, to make the runs in behind. He's the only real threat. Madueke, do you really trust him week in, week out? Conor Gallagher, do you know, he's been okay this season, but do you trust him? He hasn't been happy with the two left-backs. Chilwell has been in and out the side, you know, a player that everyone thought was a great player at one point. So there's a lot of players there that aren't what I would call solid players, and you depend on those players to be a good team. So whoever comes in has got a massive problem. He's got to, I mean, they're a young side. They're the youngest side in the Premier League, was the stat today. Well, they're going to have to somehow improve very, very quickly if any manager goes in there and makes them a decent side.
But you know, if you're a front man and you're not a natural goal scorer, right? Which, by the way, there's a lot of them around. Mm. Some people are penalty box players, strikers, and some are a bit of everything, and some are not. And Nico Jackson, it's crystal clear that he's not a natural finisher. Absolutely crystal clear. But there's no real other facets to his game that are, you know, advantageous as well. You know, he's quick. But, you know, when you're not a really good finisher, then there has to be, when you're looking at players to sign them for a club, you say, right, okay, he's not going to get his 30 goals a year. Maybe he'll get his 10 to 15, whatever it is, and he's a striker. So there has to be other parts of his game that he's going to bring to this team. So that's like a Harry Kane or whoever it is who drops off and pings balls. Or even, and I'll finish him, and I'm not his biggest fan, Kai Havertz. He'll at least attempt to link play up. And sometimes he will, and he'll hold it up in his chest and he'll bring players in, or he'll take it for a run. To me, Nico Jackson is limited in every facet, apart from being quick to get in behind. And yet somebody has looked at him when he's playing at Villarreal, when he's playing in Spain, and gone, you know, this guy can sort of lead the line for us. And really, he's not a link-up player. He's not going to pass the ball, you know, drop off and play great balls over the box. And when the ball does come in the box, it looks as if he's frightened of it. And so that's recruitment.
Yeah.
That's just bad recruitment.
Meanwhile, then, let's focus on Arsenal and this remaining fixtures that they have. Obviously, it's four games to go now until the end of the season for Arsenal. They are leading. We've talked about the pressures of that, although they showed no sign of those pressures today. Manchester City, as I mentioned, are still the favourites because if they win their remaining six matches, that's it. They are champions. Arsenal have left, oh yes, the North London derby away. Bournemouth, United, Everton. You'd imagine those three are fine, really. It's all about Spurs. Is it all about Spurs, Robbo?
Yes, I think so. They'd be too good for Bournemouth. They'd be too good for Manchester United. They'll be too good for Everton. And they're a much better team than Tottenham. But you always know with local derbies, anything could happen. The atmosphere, it could be a sending off somewhere along the line. Tottenham players winding up the Arsenal players. We've seen Arsenal players react to it on occasions. It's a massive occasion. It'll be quite a volatile atmosphere. It's as long as Arsenal keep their cool and play their game and earn the right to play as they did today, I can't see them dropping any points from now to the end of the season.
Yeah? Do you agree, Jack?
Yeah, I do. I think that's the toughest test. Listen, Man U can frustrate, and we've seen them frustrate teams, big teams, in during the course of this season. But I think you bank on any kind of consistency from Manchester United at your peril. Once Arsenal deal with that pressure, that same pressure I was talking about when it was 1-0, that as the game goes on, and you need the security of that second goal, once they're able to deal with that, I think Arsenal make certainly easy work of the remaining three. That North London derby is a huge one because all of a sudden, I think that's where Spurs' season hinges. As good as it's been, that's the cherry that I think all Spurs fans are looking for.
You going to that one too?
I bet he's banned. Arsenal want him nowhere near any more matches that are involved in there.
He's throwing pens now.
That's it. What do you think, by the way, for Arsenal's chances?
Well, excellent. Yeah. I suppose it depends on what City do as well.
Yes.
But, you know, they've got less games now than the rest, and you look at those fixtures, it's going to come down to what I fancy the chances. Yeah. I'm just not... Liverpool, and I know Stevie's talked about it, they're just looking as if they've just... I mean, they got the result at Fulham in the end at the weekend, but there's something, I think, that is stronger about this Arsenal
I think
segment.
Out of the two, you would fancy Arsenal to win their remaining games more than Liverpool at the moment, given what we've seen.
Yeah.
Liverpool, of course, are in action on Wednesday, and we'll be reflecting on their tie against Everton on the next edition of the show. Manchester United are also in action, by the way, against Sheffield United. What could possibly go wrong?
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Haaland, De Bruyne, Stevie and Shepherd's Pie, Shaka and Naps, all great teammates. But what's the perfect teammate for growing your business? Well, that's Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify makes it easy for you to show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style with gorgeous, flexible templates and powerful tools. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/FC. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/FC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/FC.
Rasmus Højlund strides up. Can he put Manchester United into the FA Cup final? The tension at Wembley Stadium is unbelievable. It's Højlund who lifts the tension and seals a topsy-turvy afternoon at Wembley Stadium. Ten Hag can hardly bring himself, Stuart, to celebrate.
Nor can the Manchester United players. Nobody ran towards Højlund.
It's not an embarrassment. It's, as I say, it's a huge achievement. Big team from United. From a decade ago, they only achieved final three times. We now two times in 2 years. So that's a good performance.
The reaction was scathing, wasn't it, of Manchester United's performance in that semi-final, both here on the show and the media in the UK. This really upset Ten Hag as he spoke today.
The reaction to Sunday is almost as though you lost the game rather than actually got to the FA Cup final. Can you understand that, given how the game went?
No, absolutely not. And you made it off, and one was made the question, is it embarrassing? Now, the reactions from you was embarrassed.
Why do you say that?
Why, it is, the comments, in football, top football is about results. And we made it to the final, and we deserved it, not only by this game, but also the other games. And yeah, we lost, and then in 20 minute control, also had a bad luck, 3-2, 3-3. We were very lucky in the end, clear. With penalties was very good. And we made it to the final. And that is huge achievement. Twice in 2 years is magnificent. For me as a manager, 4 cup finals in 4 years. And so the comments are a disgrace.
Well, if he doesn't think it's an embarrassment, he better tell the investors in the football club who are just about to empty him. And that's what's going to happen. Barring that he turns around and they wallop Manchester City by 4 or 5 in some amazing feat occurs. The only thing that was, and he's right to an extent, there is no shame ever in getting to a cup final. Mm. We've been there. Great achievement. Great to be there. What was embarrassing is the way they made it there. And there's no getting away from that. And he's, listen, Eric Ten Hag can say what he wants. He's been talking garbage. I'll give him his due. Last year, he was pretty much on it. He was on the ball, right? But he was having a better year last year. He was on the ball. And we thought, oh, this guy, you know, he'll come out, he'll call it as it is. This year, from match day one in the Premier League, to he sat there, was that press conference today?
Yeah, it was today.
Till he sat there today, all year, he's talked garbage. Absolute drivel. To be 3-0 up, and it's not just, and I was saying to Shaq earlier, it's not just the fact that Coventry came back and there was a deflected goal and then there was a penalty. It's the fact that from half-time onwards, basically, and you think about it, Bruno Fernandes' third goal that we all thought had killed the game actually came about against the run of play. Yeah. Stuart was at the game, or Stuart was doing the commentary, and he said it right. Coventry played a back five in the first half, which is not their suit. And they tried something different, and it just didn't work, and it was so comfortable for United. But as soon as Matt Robins changed to a back four, and they didn't change the personnel, they didn't bring any sub. As soon as he changed to a back four, they were more comfortable within themselves, and they pretty much dominated from that moment onwards, to an extent that Manchester United were hanging on for grim death at the end. And he, listen, this is nothing more than a man who knows he's getting paid up, he's going to lose his job, and he's just trying to save some sort of face. But it's not happening.
It's strange, isn't it? Because we had Harry Maguire on the show after the game, Robbo, and he said, look, we played like kids in the second half. It wasn't good enough. Why can't Ten Hag accept that it was a really bad day at the office, they got away with one, and we're looking forward now to the final? Why does he feel it necessary that he has to spin everything all the time into a positive where Saturday clearly wasn't, bar the result?
The problem is, he's a man who knows he's on the edge. And when managers are on the edge, they talk absolute rubbish. They try and defend themselves. They try and defend their team at times. He'll state injuries. He'll state everything else to try and make out. You know, he said there, it's brilliant for me as a manager. I've got to 4 cup finals. He's trying to build himself up again. He would be much better off by saying, yes, we were really poor in the second half. You know, we had no leaders out on the field. I didn't quite get my tactics right. I couldn't change it from the sidelines. I was disappointed with our performance. We were lucky. If you say those sort of things, yes, it's not going to make the fans enjoy your performance. But they then start to think, well, he understands what went on. You know, he's saying the same things as we are. It wasn't good enough. And we'll need to improve. Because if we don't improve against Man City, we could get beaten 4 or 5. So he's saying all the wrong things at the moment. I mean, everybody can see that. Why the people around him, Steve McLaren, who likes to think he can talk a good game and used to have somebody alongside him, used to tell him what to say in the press conferences. He should be advising him. No, just be honest for once. It's no good lying and trying to whip things up. You've got to tell the truth. And he's not doing that at the moment.
Oh, classic Robbo, passive aggression. I love it. Steve McLaren, take that.
But what's wrong with coming out and saying, listen, I have standards. I have standards, and I had them in Holland, I have them here, and we've dropped below them. We got, as Stuart said, we got the result, but I have told the players that this is unacceptable, and we got away with one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not difficult, is it?
Well, it's honest.
Like, it's really not difficult.
Is he that disillusioned that he really believes?
I think, at the very least, ever since the turn of the year, and probably going back to December to November, somehow every single Eric Ten Hag press conference has been an audition to save his job. And everything I hear from him just leans into that.
But how naive
further.
Is that?
No,
isn't going to help.
And the thing is as well, it's not just this trying to sell everybody a false story. It's the fact that he is also, in my opinion, lowering Manchester United's bar as a result. Because now all of a sudden, it doesn't really matter whether we win or lose, whether we play well or badly, but we got to more cup finals in the last 2 years than in previous. So therefore, we far better. That lowering of the bar, and it's reminiscent to me of Mourinho and that treble which was the Charity Shield, the Carabao Cup and the Europa League or whatever it was. That's where Manchester United's bar, that's where they've self-lowered their bar. And all of a sudden, this now is again leaning into that, that we're never going to be who we once were, so let's settle for this. And the thing is, Ten Hag knows, given that he's been to four cup finals in 4 years, by all accounts, that games change perspectives. Let's say they go out and put up a good performance and take City to the wire, if not win it, in the cup final. Nobody's talking about the Coventry game again. In much the same way that after this awful performance against Coventry, nobody's talking about Liverpool. Because that's the nature of the game. So for him to keep showing up and offering the same kind of empty rhetoric, it's just... It's frustrating, and I think reflects badly, very badly on him when he's trying to audition for his job.
I think he's watching too many political shows in the UK where politicians just deny it. No, that never happened. Yeah. Well, I got you on tape there. No, not it's, me.
I don't think that's just in the UK.
No, I thought I'd throw it that way. Just in case it came back to... But, you know, do you remember he said when they really struggled at Brentford recently and they got a draw, but they got absolutely... Yeah, the goal.
Mason Mount scoring late.
Yeah, they got peppered. I mean, Onana was peppered. This, and he came out after and he said... Well, Man City struggled here recently. No, they did not. Their goalkeeper made a record amount of saves for a Premier League game in the first half, and Phil Foden scored the hat-trick. I mean, he's just saying anything at the moment.
Last word to you, Rob, on this.
Well, he contradicts himself because he said this time that it's all about results. If you get a result, everything's OK. When he played Manchester City and they were outplayed and Rashford scored that early goal, he said, we're not far behind Manchester City. It was a good performance, you know. And if you looked at the game, we had two or three chances. We could have been 2-0 up. What is he thinking? What is he thinking?
Robert, you summed it up really well in the commentary. I thought it was very observant of you that when Rasmus Højlund scored, like the players didn't really... It was a very sheepish celebration, wasn't it? From most of them, we saw Harry Maguire turn around, shake the hands of the Coventry players. There was one exception, though, and that was Antony, who was cupping his ears and smiling at the Coventry players as he was running off. This, of course, was caught on camera. This got a lot of media attention as well. This is what the newspapers had to say. Oh, sorry, this is what he had to say in response. Here we go. This is what the newspapers said. Antony's graceless goading of Coventry symbolises broken United under Ten Hag. Ten Hag was asked about it in their press conference today. This is what he had to say.
He was provocated and he should not react like this. Yeah, he was provocated and that's why this was a reaction on that. So you haven't seen that provocation, you only see the reaction. But he should not do it.
This is what Antony said then on his Instagram, talking about that situation. Coventry proved why they reached the semi-final. We see the spot in the final for our fans. We achieved the way our fans were treated by their players was not nice. And I, in the heat of the moment, I've reacted to the provocations in a natural defence of my club. It's not really an apology.
I think... he's just a muppet. Full stop. I mean, it was 3-0 when he came on.
Yes, I know.
They were winning 3-0 when he came on. And they were hanging on at the end. Look, I think if I'd been a Man United player or any player with the supposed gravitas that they have, I think I'd have been more inclined to walk in that Coventry dressing room at the end of it and say, listen, lads, you know, you just keep doing what you're doing and you'll be back in the Premier League in no time because, you know, they just have the respect for what these guys have achieved. And that's not... Listen, it is no surprise that Erik ten Hag is speaking the way he is. It is no surprise that this guy is doing what he did at the weekend. United apparently were told at the time that his services were worth no more than 25 or 30 million. Right? They were told that by their recruitment, apparently, and ten Hag pushed and pushed and pushed that they spent a small fortune, 85 million on him. So the buck stops with the manager here again on this one, but the buck stops with him in terms of his behaviour. If you don't understand what it was for people like this, Coventry City players, to be in that position and have it taken away and not have the respect for them, whether they were giving you a little bit or not, not have the respect to go and say to them, do you know what, lads? What an effort, rather than goading these players. But that sums but this individual.
Is it unfair of us, though, to criticise, given we don't know all the facts? We don't know exactly what has been said.
Well, we don't know all the facts, partly because I'm not sure that those in Manchester United know all the facts. Eric Ten Hag comes out and said that he was provoked by the Coventry players. He's come out on his Instagram message and say that they were goading the Manchester United fans and he was defending the Manchester United fans. So make your mind up which one it is. But that kind of banter is regular on the park all game long. But then when the final whistle goes, you show a bit of class. Regardless of whether we're talking FA Cup semi-finals or not, whether we're talking lower league opposition or not, once the final whistle goes, you shake hands, you move on. And I mean, there are times, of course, that it spilled over, but that's an exception more than the rule. So to somehow have this, again, make what you like of either of the two excuses as to which one's is stronger or justifies the action, I don't think either does, you know. And to Eric Ten Hag goes on to point out that Harry Maguire turns to the Coventry fans and to the Coventry players and shakes their hands. That's what the game is about.
Right.
You go head to head as hard as you can for 90 or 120 minutes, and once it's done, that's the time that you show a little bit of class.
Robbo?
Absolutely, and the reason that the players didn't run towards Hoyland is because the Manchester United fans, I don't think they were over-celebrating. Yes, of course, they wanted to get to the final, but from the second half onwards, the Manchester United fans were giving their team some real stick and some real abuse at times. So the Manchester United players were sheepish. They weren't sure whether they should go and celebrate with their fans because the fans had been giving them loads of stick. And Harry Maguire was absolutely right. He turned away and went straight to the Coventry City players and shook their hands. It was a great bit of sportsmanship from him.
So then, it will be Manchester United in the final, despite all of that, against Manchester City. We learned today the kickoff time will be 3 p.m. in England at 10 a.m. here. We will start our coverage at 9 a.m. Eastern on May the 25th, live and exclusive here on ESPN+.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Coppa Italia today. Lazio taking on Juventus. This is semi-final second leg. Juve with a 2-0 lead going into this tie in Rome. 12 minutes on the clock. Castellanos here would make it 1-0.
That's a really good header. That ball is hung up, come a long way. Defender doesn't really do enough for me, but take nothing away from Castellanos. That's a good header.
Into the second half we go, and it would get even better for the hosts here as Castellanos uses strength. Nice turn, 2-0, 2-2 on aggregate.
Nice first time ball in just here, otherwise he's going to be offside. Uses his strength to just hold the defender off.
However, late on, US international, Timothy Weah blasted across the box, and it's Milik who's there to tap it in to make it 3-2.
Weah just picks the ball up in a nice spot and hits this across, I think, more in hope than picking out Milik. Maybe it comes off a defender. It doesn't find its way all the way to the far post. Easy tapping.
So then Juventus, 3-2 on aggregate. Book a place in this year's Coppa Italia final. They await the winners of Fiorentina and Atalanta, who face off on Wednesday. For more on this, let's welcome in Gab Marcotti. Gab, does that result save Allegri's time in Juventus?
No. No. I think Allegri will divide opinion and so on, but I think from the perspective of the owners, I mean, they know what's going on. Now, does it mean he's going to get sacked this summer? That's still pretty much up in the air. I don't think there's anything he can do results-wise this season. They're going to finish second or third, most likely third in Serie A. They may win the Coppa Italia, but it doesn't change, really, I think, the sense of drift, the sense of frustration, the sense of being out of step with the rest of the footballing world. And right now, the only reason Max Allegri's still there and the only reason he may come back next year is because he has an enormous contract with 1 year to run. And right now, Juve simply can't afford to let him go.
Speaking of managers, Gab, we've seen a lot of speculation over the last 24 hours that Liverpool may be homing in on Arne Slot to come and take over Jurgen Klopp. For those who don't know, who is he?
So he's another bald Dutch manager. And before, you know, images of Erik ten Hag and Peter Bosz and Jaap Stam come to mind, thus far, he really hasn't set a foot wrong. You know, he arrived at Feyenoord. That's where he made his name. Really picked the club up, got them to the Conference League, Europa Conference League final, where they lost to Jose Mourinho's Roma. And then last season, they went on, despite losing a number of key players, actually, they went on and they won the double in Holland. And this season, of course, they're second. And once again, they've gone deep in Europe. And you know, I think the thing about his style of football, you can definitely see a bit of a parallel between him and Klopp in the sense that this is a team that they like to press, probably more so than Klopp's Liverpool. He used wingers and wide area runners from midfield, probably even more than Liverpool. It's very front foot forward. It's exciting to watch. You know, they are not winning the league to a Peter Bosz side. That needs to be specified. But look, he's done it, you know, despite losing one of his best players, Kokoc, who went to Benfica in the summer. He's not somebody who complains. He's somebody who's generally quite charismatic. And so I think that's the appeal. Obviously, it is a big jump from Feyenoord to Anfield. And I think that's one of the things that they're going to want to consider when they consider whether to appoint him.
ESPN FC's number one head chief senior correspondent Mark Ogden, Gab, has said that he is number one when it comes to Liverpool's list. So it suggests it's going to be likely he's going to be the new man.
Well, if number one says he was number one, who am I to say no? I mean, the only thing I would specify is it's, you know, it's one thing. Well, there's just two things, actually. One is Ruben Amorim was number one until he wasn't. And I think, again, I think with Slot, there's a lot to like about him. I mean, you remember he was linked to the Spurs job as well before they signed Ange Postecoglou last summer. But I think a lot of it has to do with him coming in, both sides meeting each other. You know, you can study somebody from afar, study his football, blah, 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 get a sense. But I think it's until you talk, you sit down, until you talk about the project, as they like to say, how you're going to strengthen the squad, what big decisions you're going to make. Remember Mohamed Salah and Virgil van Dijk, both of them are going to have a year left on their contracts. So there's big decisions to be made ahead. And, you know, I think that could all change after that. But certainly I'm not surprised that Slot is very much up there on Liverpool's shortlist.
A Dutchman that is charismatic.
And has no experience outside of the Eredivisie.
Oh, I'm not questioning that. I'm questioning a Dutchman that is charismatic. I've never met one.
I'll take that, Mario.
Oh, Mario!
It's Mario.
No, apart from Mario.
Well, did you work for Rude Hullet, Craig?
Very uncharismatic.
Yeah, don't start on Bully. Don't bring him up. No, FA Cup finals.
They're all getting it.
I read one English publication, but on Remain Nameless, said Liverpool fans are all in Arnie Slot.
All of them?
Right, canvassed them all.
Wow, in the last, this is like Stevie.
In the last hour.
Yeah, here's some tweets of Liverpool. Who? There we go. Shaka, do you want to say anything?
No, I'm good.
Okay, all right. Ralph Ranić to Bayern Munich, Gab. What on earth's going on?
Yeah, it's funny how he's resurfaced. I mean, I think this must have been the fifth time in his career that he's been linked with a move to Bayern. Look, I mean, despite whatever opinions people may have formed based on his 6 months at Old Trafford in, let's face it, as an interim boss and I think pretty tricky circumstances, he's still very highly regarded. He's doing a good job with Austria. I think the tricky thing with him is obviously he's going to go to the Euros. And it's going to be one of those situations which, you know, if he does take over, it would be afterwards. I think he's somebody who's in the mix right now as people are not commenting. But, you know, from Bayern's perspective, you know, they poked around. They tried with Xabi Alonso. They got a no. They tried to bring back Nagelsmann. They got a no. And so they're just kind of working their way down the list. And there's always been a strong kind of pro-Rangnick component within Bayern. But there's also been a strong anti-Rangnick component within Bayern. He's kind of like the great man of German football who's never worked at the club. And there's some people who perhaps to some degree, maybe his past with Leipzig and Hoffenheim and whatnot, resent him a little bit. So I think that's going to be an interesting one to watch. But it is worth noting that, you know, Max Eberl, who's now the sporting director at Bayern, obviously would have worked with Rangnick before. And there's obviously a relationship there.
Beautiful stuff, Gab. Thank you very much. Gab will be back with us for extra time as well, by the way, alongside Robbo. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel. Stevie hates Egg Benedict. What a surprise. We know.
Well, of course it does.
It doesn't have any ground beef in it.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Okay, let's go to the Championship. Leicester have had a little wobble of late, haven't they, when it comes to automatic promotion chances. Destiny, though, still very much
watch this.
Them.
Was a foul here that was taken from the wrong place and the guy might have been offside.
Right.
Apart from that, was just no VAR.
No VAR, but it's good because then you can just enjoy games.
Yeah. Don't watch this. Oh, that was too much. That was a tight call.
I think he's on. I think he's on.
Well, we'll just guess.
No, he's off.
There we go. No, he's on.
I can tell for sure.
It was really good.
That was 4 minutes in and then the floodgates just opened in the second half, and Didi here making it 2-0.
Really nice header, and then, like you say, the resistance just capitulated at that point.
Oh, Fatawu there with a brilliant finish.
Yeah, terrific goal cutting in here, still an awful lot to do. Southampton been going well as well.
Very much so, yeah. Lost to Cardiff, of course, at the weekend.
This was a big game.
Hopes of automatic promotion.
Yeah.
And then Fatawu here into Jamie Vardy.
That's a really nice volley from Vardy.
Knows exactly these days.
48.
Wow.
This is the pick of the bunch. Jisbury Hall on the break, and then Vardy first time across. There you go.
Lovely. Hat trick.
Right.
There we go. What a time to put in that sort of performance if you're Leicester. 5-0, 94 points. They are 7 clear of Ipswich, who I think are away.
5.
Oh. Oh, five,
yeah,
five,
math
five
is
points.
Terrible.
I know. Hey, he went to university. Him,
I didn't do maths at university, did I?
Yeah, but surely you do 94 take away 89.
Live television. I just made a slight mistake. Right. On this Reddit. I think I need a new prescription.
Okay.
I'm surprised you can read that, Craig. What's going on before?
That's the Premier League table, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. QPR then. Leeds United is on Friday. Big game for the visitors. Live on ESPN Plus at 3 p.m. Eastern. Horrible news for Sergiño Dest. It was confirmed that he's torn his ACL, which of course means that he will miss the rest of the season for PSG. And for US fans, he will miss Copa America. This is a player who returned to the Eredivisie and has had an excellent season so far after struggling, of course, at Barcelona. A lot more reaction to that on Football Americas, which drops on Thursday. Bayer Leverkusen, of course, looking to go the whole season unbeaten. You can follow their journey as they're at home against Stuttgart on Saturday. That game live, 12:30 Eastern on ESPN+. And a strange old schedule for La Liga. Real Madrid are playing on Friday because of the game against Bayern Munich in the Champions League. They're away against Real Sociedad. Saturday sees a huge game in the Spanish capital. Atletico Madrid taking on Athletic Club. And then on Monday, it's Barcelona against Valencia. You've got Seville derby late on Sunday as well. All these games live on ESPN+. This is Usain Bolt and Jude Bellingham yesterday at the Laureus Awards. That's, of course, Bellingham's celebration. We can see Usain Bolt's celebration as well.
Is he still trying to play for Dortmund?
There we go. Oh, yes! Do you remember that? Good old Usain Bolt. What a lovely man he was.
Oh, I never met him when he came
in. You got in a grump? Come on. Letting anyone on these days. We're letting anyone on extra time as well. Gav and Robbo will be back.
89, so 90, 91, Robbo, 92, 94, 7! 7!
What are you counting?
7!
Welcome into extra time! Bit of maths, there we are. Gab Marcotti is here. Oh,
hey,
there you are, Gab.
Hydrated.
Is it water?
A very hydrated Gab Marcotti.
Oh, yeah, very
I do
so.
Think that could be a little slide gin and tonic.
Why not? Hey,
well, why not? Well, it's live on air.
It's time of night. That's extra time. Anything goes. Look, Robbo's put his T-shirt on.
With the stripe.
It's nice, isn't it?
Very, very.
Robbo, he looks as if he's dribbled down his shirt.
Yes. Big dribble, wouldn't it?
A lot of dribble.
There we are. How have you been, Gab? I feel like I haven't spoken to you for a while. What's going on?
All good, all good. Plugging along, enjoying. We have the big Gab and Jules draft coming up on Thursday. I know you're all NFL fans. It's the NFL draft is of course coming up. So we're counter-programming by drafting the best players born in the year 2002.
Any truth in the rumour that he's drafting Jules somewhere away? He's drafting Jules for...
Who was born in 2002, Gab? Who's going to be in the mix? Who was in 2002? What year is that?
Well, in the mix, you've got players like Cole Palmer, Pedri, Camavinga, Jeremy Doku, Josko Gvardiol. And there's kind of a drop-off after those guys. But we got the help of Tor Christian Carlson, of course, former scout, director of football, and analytics guru Ryan O'Hanlon. They'll be, the four of us will be competing to see who can put together
and Craig,
the best draft.
Is Craig's invited on as well?
No.
Oh,
we couldn't afford Craig.
Okay, well, it sounds right up your street.
I almost amazed us. I have to say, I was.
Craig, just stop talking.
Who decided it was 2002? Yeah.
Well, the idea is all these players are all 21 or 22, right? So this is the third year that we've done it. We started with the class of with players born in 2000. And we went for that because at 21, 22, that's when, if they were playing US sports, they'd be seniors in college and coming out and coming into the draft. But also because I think at that age, you've got a mix of players who've already achieved a lot and also players who, you know, maybe are kind of later developers. And so presumably there's a skill in identifying those guys, especially the later rounds.
Detailed explanation.
Yes.
Do you remember the recently the website did a top, was it top 39 player, yeah. top 43, a top 100, top 37 and a half.
Right.
Who comes up with that?
I don't know. Craig.
Top 39.
Who do you think deserves more praise, Arteta signing Havertz or Havertz reviving his career?
Well, I go back to what I say. I think Havertz is still Jekyll and Hyde to me. I mean, it was better today as it went on, not early on. But, I mean, ultimately, if he didn't revive his career. Arteta revived it for him. Mm. You know, put it one way. If Mikel Arteta hadn't paid, or Arsenal hadn't paid 70 million, I don't think there would have been many others would have been fishing in that pond with that kind of money.
No, but it is working out well, Robbo.
It is at the moment, but you remember at the start of the season when he was playing, they were trying to play him in central midfield on the left-hand side of that midfield three. The crowd didn't like it. He was getting a lot of stick off the Arsenal crowd. He wasn't playing particularly well. He looked way off the pace. He couldn't defend, but he's played better when he's been in the centre-forward position. So, yeah, it's working for him at the moment, but I agree with Craig. He's been Jekyll and Hyde, really.
You could call it lucky or not lucky, but let's be honest about it. As Robbo said, he bought him to play in this midfield three, which he has done now and again, and he could do against the weaker teams. It's worked okay. Against the better teams, not so much. And we all sat here in the summer and said, nah, that's not going to work as a midfielder. And so in that sense, the experiment hasn't worked. What's fell into place for him is that Gabriel Jesus and Eddie Nketiah, but more so Gabriel Jesus, he's either been injured or out of form.
Yeah. Well, he's keeping them both out of the team now, isn't he?
So he's needed somebody, and he's got somebody that can go and play in that front three. Now, that's not initially the reason he bought him, but that's where he's best.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's worked out for him.
And they could win the league with it.
Absolutely.
Gab, do Chelsea need to hire a new manager this summer? The lack of any real progress this season has been shocking.
What do you mean, lack of real progress? Because you heard Pochettino when he came out and he said that the analytics show that Chelsea are actually fourth in the Premier League table.
Wait, you like analytics. You can't mock the analytics.
Oh, God. I like real analytics, not just kind of very sort of superficial thing where, like, you know, the nerd comes out of the basement and says, don't worry, boss, we're the fourth best team in the Premier League. The analytics say so.
I mean, give him a promotion.
Look, he's had an absolute ton of mitigating circumstances this season, right? An absolute ton, as has Erik ten Hag, by the way. However, I think you still, with Chelsea, what's really frustrating is it really does feel like one step forward and two steps back week after week. Amazingly, they have 8 points more than they had last season, so I guess you could call that progress.
Wow.
Obviously, they've had a bunch of injuries, but what would really, really concern me is that Chelsea's best player by a country mile was signed on the last day of the transfer window, and that would be Cole Palmer. And that, to me, speaks, I don't know, it doesn't speak well of this whole planning and everything that they talk about if they have to go and kind of conjure a guy out of thin air. Because I tell you what, Cole Palmer's not there for Chelsea. They're in the bottom half of the table, no doubt about it, maybe even closer to the relegation zone than the top half of the table.
Gab, you got a lot of Chelsea fans who are friends. What do they make of all of this?
It's funny because, you know, there's obviously people are frustrated with Pochettino when they have games like this, and they like him when they have games like the one against Everton. But there is a ton of frustration towards the owner. I mean, Todd Bowley's been seen as this kind of cartoon character, right? He's got kind of the little sort of like jock attitude and wrestler's build, and people mock Chelsea because of the money they spent. And the communication, I think, has been really, really poor in the sense that the only person who talks is Pochettino, and I don't think that's healthy for people to understand, you know, the direction the club are trying to go in. All that said, I did speak to one of those analytic super scouts guys at another club who told me, actually, the players they signed were the players that everybody would have wanted to sign. They're the players that Liverpool and City and whatever else would have signed. they just wouldn't have signed them at those prices, at those numbers. And I think that's another problem too, because they're going to have issues with profit and sustainability regulations. But this guy who makes a living off of spotting young talent said, yeah, most of these guys they brought in, many of them are going to be really, really good. It's just that, you know, we wouldn't have paid 80 or 100 million for them, or 40 million or whatever it is that they paid for them.
Who do your friends support, Robbo?
Most of them, West Ham, actually.
Don't pretend you have friends.
Well, it's three. Three is enough, isn't it? Yeah.
Two out of 33.
All three support West Ham. And they used to love Shaka. They said he was their top goalkeeper. Only Les Seeley was better.
Like Robbo's friends.
There's a lot of Havertz stuff in here. All right. Should Arsenal keep Havertz as number one striker option going into next season? Let's talk about something else in this question, Robbo. Arsenal, who else should they... let me just run it. Where else should they upgrade besides left back?
Where should they upgrade? I'm not sure there are too many places they could upgrade. If they want to play Rice as a more forward midfield, I think they could have an upgrade on Jorginho. They could have a more athletic player. Thomas Partey's had his time. He's been injured a lot, but I still don't think he's a top-class player that makes Arsenal be at the very top week in, week out. Jorginho, you know, has done well, but I think they can do better than him. We get a really good, strong defensive player that can also play. And at centre-forward, they're the two areas that I think they need strengthening, because as Craig said in the show, Martinelli has his good days and his bad days, and then Trossard comes in. Left-back, that might be an issue. Tomiyasu played today. They've had Zinchenko, Kivior. So maybe a top-quality left-back. They're the areas.
There you go. Gab, why are you angry? What's happened?
Well, other than the ritual disrespect for my man Jorginho. I just want to remind everybody that Arsenal spent a ton of money on a guy who they thought was going to be their left-back this season, and that's Jurrien Timber. I have no idea... and he just came back to training.
He's got a great goal in the reserves.
You know, he's going to ease. I don't know if he's actually a viable left back going forward. Maybe because he'd be more, I think, of a defensive left back than what Zinchenko brings. I mean, that comes down to what Arteta wants. I would throw in center back if you're going to use Timber as a left back, just because to me it looks pretty thin once you get past Saliba and Gabriel.
Craig, thoughts on Havertz celebrating against his old club?
Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you are.
I'm not Craig.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
They were, I tell you what, Chelsea fans would be, I'm sure they weren't too displeased when he left.
No.
I'm sure they were pretty happy that he scored the goal in the Champions League final and all that. But yeah, he needed to go and find something different in his career, and who's to blame him for moving from this sort of off-the-cuff shambles to a club that is, at least whether we think Arteta is the greatest thing since sliced bread or not, he's gone into a much better side, isn't he? He's gone into a structure.
Mm-hmm.
And at least that structure is at least giving him a chance on a more consistent basis.
Burley, you've been involved in both of these. What's more nerve-wracking, being in a title race or a relegation battle?
Well, depends where you are. If you lose the title, you're going to... I mean, at Celtic, oh, my God. Wow.
I've also been involved in both. I go relegation battle.
It's more nerve-wracking.
Yeah, because you're in a bad team.
Because financially you're going to get hit. Yeah.
No, because you're in a bad team.
Your contract's going to...
Because you're in a bad team.
Do you know, I'm not sure, because I remember, you know, obviously, but sometimes when you're in a relegation battle, all you can do is what you can do.
Right.
And you've got a limited amount of tools, and it is nerve-wracking. I know, and it is, and it's you're fighting and you're scrapping every week and looking at the fixtures. But when you're at the top of the league, as I was with Celtic, or joint top with Rangers, and it went to the last day of the season, you're now under pressure because, for our example, we could have won it in the second last day and dropped points. And then there's that feeling of you've thrown it away,
right,
or you're going to throw it away, and then there's that pressure.
So you're more about what's going on the pitch as opposed to your bank balance?
and your contract thing.
Why is that your focus?
It's always money.
Let me tell you, Dan, Xhaka was never worried about relegation because 4 weeks from the end of the season, him and his agent were phoning every Premier League club up saying, you know, I'm free, I'm available. If we go down, I'll come to you for anything. That's what Xhaka was like. Selfish.
Was it Jonathan Barnett?
Jonathan Barnett,
mate. Jonathan Barnett from Wales, of course, Gareth Bale.
You still use somebody, I see somebody swanning around the building here.
No. You mean no? For my ESPN business? No.
my ESPN business.
So who do you use for your vacations?
That's what am I doing?
Gab, will Juventus reclaim the Scudetto anytime soon?
I think not for a while. I think that it looks like they may have to sell one of their saleable assets this summer. There were big question marks over Chiesa's fitness. And I don't think they're going to do it if Allegri sticks around, and that seems to be the case. Going forward, who knows? I mean, Inter are still financially a bit of a mess, even though they were able to refinance. I think Milan are on the right track, but now they're thinking of changing managers again because Stefano Pioli's under pressure, especially after losing the derby. So there could be potentially an opening, but I just don't think Allegri's is going to take them there.
Craig, who makes the top four first, Chelsea or Manchester United?
Oh, well, I think United will definitely change manager. Mm-hmm. Maybe they won't, but I think they will. I'm going to say Man United.
Final question, Gab. It's a zombie apocalypse. Which member of the ESPN FC team is making it the longest? Wow, let's think.
Ooh.
Stevie's got no chance.
What do you mean, make it the longest? I don't understand.
So who will live the longest? If it's a zombie apocalypse,
right,
and you've got to try and survive, yeah, who will survive? Stevie knows.
Okay, so... Okay, yeah, I think we can safely rule out
Stevie. Well, he won't get out of his bed. die in his bed.
Shaq is the most educated out of all of us, but I just don't know that his skills translate to survival skills in the wilderness. Yeah, I like to imagine that it would probably be Robbo. Because I reckon it's going to be Robbo because he would just get into his little boat and he would just start rowing.
As long as you weren't in it with me.
From all the zombies.
Oh, yeah.
That would be rubble. They'll think he's one of them.
Yeah.
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 He's on our side.
Craig will be like, you think I'm bothered? You're a zombie. What are you going to do?
Well, he'd be like that.
Well,
wouldn't
I think
zombies.
You'd survive, Dan. Dan would survive. He'd slither under a little rock, as he normally does.
Yeah, exactly. I'd poke the bear and then run away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hide behind Nadum. Come on, you yes, exactly.
They wouldn't attack you, would they, the zombies? You'd be too busy putting your vacation in, wouldn't you? So, do you mind? Just hold on a second, William.
Just wait a minute. There we go.
Just get booked in a couple of weeks.
I think that's enough now. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. We will be back tomorrow to reflect on Liverpool against Everton, Manchester United in action as well against Sheffield United.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.